Forward button. All right, let's get going. Everybody, thank you for joining the space. If you want to talk at any time, please request. Auto request for Joe there as a go-to space. What up, Joe?
Hello there.
Hey. Yeah, anytime anybody wants to speak, please let us know. We're trying to be more interactive and make this fun.
No problem. I'll let you guys steer it to start and I'll hop in.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you questions for sure. All right, Ben, what's up? How's it going? How's everything? How's life? How's COVID?
Oh, Pat, I'm doing just fantastic. I've been in my apartment this entire week, and so I've just been hankering for something good to think about, and that good thing has come in the form of the now. Pat, I don't know if you were able to see the tweets about this. I wanted to potentially make it a game of guess where Marquette is in the Ken Palm.
Yeah, okay, I did see it.
The top 50 Ken Palm Marquette Golden Eagles.
Oh, Christ. Is it like how top 50? Like 50 exactly or?
49.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
No. From 85 to 49 over the course of two games. There's smashing. We will never die.
Oh, my God. God, it's so annoying because I was just about to just be like, hey, like the team is fine and fun and good, but we don't have to like think about the tournament because their analytic numbers are way off and they're just nowhere near where they need to be to qualify for the tournament. And they beat the brakes off of like half of a good team and like a terrible, terrible team. And all of a sudden their freaking numbers are right where they need to be again. It's so annoying. Mm-hmm. Now I have to think about them as a tournament team again. And I have to maybe think about getting,
and we have DePaul coming up too. So like, I'd imagine the hype is only going to continue from here until we get to Seton Hall next Saturday.
I don't know. DePaul's better than Georgetown. DePaul's obviously not better than Providence, but I don't know what the heck Providence was. So
that was
that was
just a very weird game. I don't know if there was something up with them. I know, and actually, I think Providence is at 51 now. So technically, Marquette is a better team than Providence now, even though they had that 16 next to their name. But boy, there is, I think, a legitimate turnaround starting to happen. And like, did you know that Marquette shot 75% from two today?
I did, because I saw a tweet about it from a Georgetown guy that I follow, which made me very happy because it seemed very
I was looking at the box score and we were at 75% and Georgetown was at like 33%. So just completely dominated the paint.
I don't want to say this is like a foregone conclusion and a given at this point, but who could have possibly thought that this team would get better if they shot less threes and went to the rim more? Like, who could possibly have thought of that? Like, oh my God.
Who among us was clamoring for that? Certainly not you.
No, definitely not me at all. what a revelation actually doing what your team is good at is. I think that's a good place to start. Omax Prosper with 22 points tonight. And he is probably, although I will say he has been making threes as well lately. But if you have to pinpoint, you know, one person who sort of epitomizes the go to the rim instead of settling for bad shots mentality, Omax, sort of his like downhill flow play over the last few games where he just sort of lumbers into the paint against his defender and sort of forces in a contested layup has been probably the biggest, not the biggest development. The biggest development is the freaking transition is finally working. But the biggest sort of, I guess it's a metaphor for how they've been playing better on offense. But yeah, obviously the transition, the first half stretch with all the fast breaks and the lobs and everything, unbelievable that stuff's finally working. I mean, if you want to talk about what wasn't working early in the season, it was that they would get going on those fast breaks, but they just weren't, they were almost bad for them because they weren't converting them. And
right.
Now, I mean, you couldn't, the difference today was absolutely stark. It was completely in sync and high flying, and they were just forcing it in on fast breaks, which is like 1,000% how this team needs to thrive. Like it's such a perfect blueprint for them. And I mean, just to see it in full effect with sort of a bit of a Lob City twist to it was exactly what the doctor ordered for them. It's extremely, extremely encouraging to see that.
Right. And that's kind of the thing about, you know, needing to play in transition like that. It kind of requires that innate feel of knowing where that guy is going to be, because you can't have a set play for transition. It's, you're trying to control your own chaos. And so at the beginning of the year, Marquette was terrible in transition because, at least from what I'm seeing now, it's that lack of knowing where that guy is going to be based on having played with them for X amount of time. But having all that be in sync, and what I'm hoping is a more consistent resurgence of Omax, in that, you know, I was probably one of his harsher critics at the beginning of the year because he had like the physical tools there, but just the second he would get the ball, it was a lack of awareness of what was going around him and no confidence to make any sort of decision. And so a lot of times, even if there was a flow to the offense, the possession would just kind of stop in his hands because he wouldn't really know what to do and would get almost paralyzed with it. And even when he would drive to the basket, there were a lot of moments where he would do kind of like two hesitations to almost let the defender get position on him or do some weird little shot fake when he's right around the rim. But today, and against Providence, there was a lot less of that. And there was a lot more, okay, I am driving to the rim and I am going to get a layup. Like on that sequence where Kolek had a pretty bad turnover and then had the defensive presence to get it right back on Georgetown's transition opportunity, he passed it to Omax, and Omax was dribbling till about half court line. And then he just saw someone in the paint on the other end just being a little bit lazy. And he just thought, okay, I'm going now.
Yeah.
And got an and one out of it. And so it's that sort of development. Plus what I'm hoping is a little bit more of a refined 3-point shot from him. And also Shaka is putting him at the head of the press, which it is working so well. Like it is the perfect defensive setup in my mind. And it truly allows them to do whatever they want on defense, because when he is playing with that intensity, he can switch on anyone. So he was on Dante Harris for some of those half court opportunities, and it doesn't matter, because he has that switchability. And like Queth and Igodaro are just really coming into their own a lot more on defense. So It's been a fantastic development if we want to take it from the Omax point of view specifically.
Yeah. He's made 5 of his last 8 threes over the last 4 games, which is a huge step forward from him, because even showing that 3, let alone like making it, obviously I don't think he's going to get to a point where he's making it a volume this year, but showing it is a huge benefit to his downhill driving game, which is obviously his bread and butter, as well as sort of fast break dunks and getting tips in transition. Tyler Kolek, I'm a broke boy right now and not paying for KenPom at the moment. Only using T rank. Can you pull up Tyler Cole? Do they have the KenPom box score done yet? Do you know?
I think they do. I was just actually looking at his KenPom page.
I'd want to see his O rating over the last like 4 or 5 games. He's just been unbelievable. The offense. It's so funny.
Yeah, today and
It's so funny because the offense just goes in the tank whenever he's off the court, and it's just so visible and obvious that I just it you can't help but laugh, like the momentum that they had built up at the beginning of that game and or at the middle section of the first half, and just completely hits the rails when Colet goes out. And obviously the refs decide that Marquette's up by 20, so we're going to call every foul against Marquette at 1.2, which is another element altogether. But yeah, it's good to have Colet on the court, I think, is a good overall takeaway. The guy has just got the offense completely humming. And no shade to Daryl Morcel, who's, you know, a really important player for this team, but just getting the ball into Kolek's hands decisively over the last like five games, instead of relying on Morcel to, you know, run the offense a whole lot of the time, has just been a massive difference maker for them. And, you know, Morcel is more suited to being sort of a grinder defensive guard that, you know, can score at volume and can get his own shot, which is huge for them every once in a while, but sort of running him through the offense on a regular basis isn't the most sustainable prospect. And Kolek has just been, oh, he's just been so solid. 11
right
for Kirk Weth tonight too. That's that's really good.
And to answer your question, he had a 71-0 rating against Creighton, but today and on, what was it, Tuesday against Providence, 140 and 154 O rating. Jeez, and
jeez.
And what's weird, I was actually kind of thinking about this today. I was looking at his page before this game. I think his offensive rating now is at like 89 something, which is really not good. But even before the game, it was 85. And
well, you gotta,
I was thinking like at the same time, like that number in and of itself is really bad. And
right. Wow.
But there's such a stark difference between, like, if you were to ask 9 out of 10 Marquette fans, they'd say, oh yeah, Kolek's been a tremendous addition to the offense. I love what he's doing. And so everyone's eye test seems to universally disagree with what this number says. And wow, I don't know if I've seen that sort of difference before. And then maybe like that,
though, is how bad he was for like a 5-game stretch, like in the, from like Illinois through Northern Illinois, he, I don't think, made a single 3-pointer. No, he was 0-for-6 in that stretch from three, and just was like a complete disaster. Like, I think he probably scored, he scored 8 points against West Virginia. So he, in that 6-game stretch or 5-game stretch, he scored 14 points. So like him just like going away on offense for a while was, is a huge reason why that number is so low. But I mean, it's just become very clear that he's sort of found his role. There's just a lot of players who were sort of scuffling to start the season, I would say, just kind of trying to figure stuff out, and it's coming together. I mean, Kolek and Omax, I think, and I'm glad we led with this before we open it up. Please, if you want to get in and get some takes off, request, and we will put you on. But I think it's good that we started with Omax and Kolek tonight, because of the last week, those two putting stuff together, and Kolek's has been sort of coming along for a little longer, but those two putting it together have really made a massive, massive difference over the last couple of games.
Yeah, and that's not even talking about, you know, the current sniper that we now know as Cam Jones.
Yeah, I mean, guess you look at the freaking the two games, the Morcel not being there against UConn and Cam not being there against Creighton, and it really has the feel of, you know, if those two guys had been there in those close games, would there have been a difference? Because in against Connecticut, they really couldn't really guard all that well when it mattered, and Morcel is a huge differentiator there. And just, you know, they're one shot away from beating Creighton, and just having Cam Jones's offense there would have been made a massive difference. And yeah, because Cam Jones coming out of that has come back firing. He's just, he's a special player, man. The kind of,
I am so excited for him.
Yeah, he's great. It is a delight to watch him play basketball. Joe, what you got for us? You're here. You're listening.
Hey guys, how's it going tonight? You guys had a lot of good points about Omax and Kolek to start us off tonight, and I think it boils down to really shock of putting these guys in better positions to succeed. I think we're seeing adjustments with this coaching staff that are really refreshing. I made a joke earlier that, you know, some of us probably have some Omax tweets we need to delete from earlier in the year, but I think it's partly because, Omax is settling more into a role that helps this team win and for him to be successful. I think Ben made a good point about the way he's used in the press now and the way he's maybe more of a weapon defensively than he was earlier in the year. And he's more efficient with his 3-point shooting. And with Kolek, I think, I don't know for sure, but it seems that the team has maybe had a come to Jesus meeting at some point this year, thinking, look, guys, we are not a great 3-point shooting team. We need to create offense in different ways. We're not going to stop shooting threes, but it can't be the number one focal point of our offense. And I think Kolek driving and dishing and getting paint touches and creating for the big guys or kicking out to guys for more wide open threes, so the 3-pointers that Marquette does take are more uncontested than contested. And I think that's led to Kolek being in a better position to succeed and impact this offense. Kolek was especially great tonight. I mean, it seems like he got into the lane almost any time he wanted. And I think it does go to, players improving and settling into their roles. But also, I think Shaka and the staff putting guys in more ideal positions to be successful. You know, when you've got eight, nine new faces in your rotation, or you got a whole new team in general because you got a new coaching staff, it probably took a while to maybe for everybody to settle into their roles and decide what puts every player in the best position to help this team win. And I think they're starting to figure that out a little bit.
Yeah. I also want to say, like, I did say Daryl Morsell needs to run the offense less, and that's why it's kind of been good. Shout out to Daryl Morsell to sort of carrying this team to sort of the early momentum that they got for like the first like 2 weeks of the season, scoring 20 points in those first four games. They would not have been 4-0 without him easily, because, you know, all those guys like Omax and Kolek and at that point in the season, just like nowhere near what they're doing now. And so, I mean, and this team would have absolutely no shot at accomplishing anything this year if it wasn't for that start where they avoided a couple of potentially terrible losses and then beat Illinois, beat Mississippi, beat West Virginia. Like, that start has sort of laid the groundwork for any sort of potential success here. And obviously, the 7 predicted loss gauntlet is still to come after this interesting DePaul game upcoming. But, anything that this team goes on and accomplishes is sort of on the basis of that start. So I don't want to make it seem like
Let's be honest, like, yeah, we can't beat a bad team tonight. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But they destroyed a bad team. You know, there was a stretch there late first half where Georgetown made a run, and maybe there was a little bit of anxiety among the fan base, but this was, you know, a butt kicking for the most part for 35 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that this Shaka team, you know, we all hated the Creighton loss. We don't need to rehash that, but, you know, that was a tough one. But I think this is the first 0-3 start ever in the Big East, but they also followed that up to what I believe is, and somebody looked it up, and I think it's accurate, the first time Marquette has won back-to-back Big East games by 25 or more points.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to totally say that off the top of my head, but that makes sense.
Bounce back. So I think a lot of credit goes to the coaching staff to figure some things out. And again, they beat a bad team tonight, but they left no doubt. So certainly an encouraging effort.
Leave no doubt. I wanted to find that clip if I could at one point during the game. It's unfortunately...
The other part about this is Georgetown was a bad team. Like, on KenPom before this game, it was projected as a 1-point win. So essentially a toss up. And to bring Georgetown to the point where Patrick Ewing has said in his presser afterwards that Big John is rolling over in his grave.
Did he actually say that?
Like, yes, he did. So,
I mean, first of all, get over yourself, Georgetown. For the love of God, you are not the most important thing in the world, and you've been an absolute disaster for 5 years. So I don't think this one loss is why. Maybe the four guys getting, you know, leaving the program in the middle of the season is probably more of a concern than
James Akinjo is thriving at Baylor right now.
Yeah, like, oh my God, Mac McClung was an awesome college basketball player away from Georgetown. Like, maybe take care of your house. I will say, Tory Vick says Donald Carey's Georgetown's best player, so that's probably also a pretty big reason why they were not nearly up to the task tonight. I'll also say that Aminu Muhammad is going to drive me insane because he already has the look and demeanor of a player that is going to just absolutely frustrate the heck out of Marquette over the next 4 years if he stays. Although, who knows? Like, you know, Georgetown players transfer all the time now. So,
yeah, there are a few times I saw a look on his face of, what the hell am I doing here, sort of thing. And yeah, so, well,
I mean, I don't blame them. They suck. That program's in hell.
Yeah.
That program is, I mean, and to be clear, this makes me incredibly happy. Like, the Big East has absolutely needed Villanova over the last seven, however many years. Is it eight now? I think, no, nine now. This is year
nine. It started my freshman year, so it was the beginning of 20. Yeah.
It started
to the 2014 season.
Buzz's last year was the.
So this is, yeah, the eighth year of the new Big East, yeah.
It'd be the ninth year of the new Big East because Buzz plus seven, Steve, and then – so this is year nine. And Big East has absolutely needed Georgetown to carry – or not Georgetown, I'm sorry, Villanova to carry them to national relevance for, like, seven of those 9 years. And I'm internally grateful to the prestige that Villanova brings to the conference. I absolutely 100% – do not need Georgetown to be good, and in fact relish in their terribleness. I find it absolutely hilarious, and they are the most sort of entitled, like, this isn't how Georgetown basketball is supposed to be. And it's just like, well, your program is a disaster, so I don't know, like,
go protest another bus stop going through your campus.
Yeah. do other things. They're also like a fake graduate school too. Like, they don't, like, they're not really.
Yes, absolutely.
Either they kind of try to think that they're the Ivy League school of DC. So again, it really warms my cold heart to see Georgetown in the absolute gutter. I don't need them to be good. It's very entertaining to just go down there, absolutely whip their ass by 30 points for 2 hours, and then just, like, not even have to think about it. That's such a delightful experience.
Yes, there's a big difference between how I get frustrated playing Georgetown close versus how I get frustrated playing, like, Creighton close. Because I enjoy when Creighton is good, and I enjoy hating them in this sort of sense. I just hate Georgetown.
I need absolutely nothing from Georgetown. They do absolutely nothing for me, and nothing that they've done since, like, I've been aware of college basketball has done anything for me. Even, like, the good teams with, like, Jeff Green and
The best thing they did for me, yeah, Roy Hibbert in 2008 when they were a two seed in the same region as my beloved Jayhawks, and they got just curb stomped by Steph Curry and allowed Davidson to get to the Elite Eight.
That's probably and lose the most to Kansas in Georgetown NCAA tournament moment of over the last 15 years,
and also Dunk City.
Oh yeah, well, that too. Yeah, they're lost and Ohio. Let's just keep it going. Keep rolling with the embarrassing Georgetown shit. I like it.
Run it back.
Yes, I want to say. I think you're right.
Yeah, because it seems like 40 years ago, go, but
yeah, no, I think you're right. Because it was not the Scotty Reynolds year was Pitt, not Georgetown, right? When Scotty Reynolds made the Final Four. Georgetown, I think it was Pitt that they denied the Final Four to.
My son Levance Fields.
My absolute golden god, Levance Fields.
Best corners in the game.
Just like a sentient potato playing basketball. Just
to Juan Blair, just a larger potato.
Juan Blair just stronger. He just didn't have knees. That was his big issue. Georgetown made the Final Four in 2007. Yes, that's correct.
Oh, shit, I forgot.
Yeah, that's part. Actually the most relevant Georgetown NCAA tournament over the last 15. Oh, that's exactly 15 years ago. So eat it, Joe. I was right. It's 2022, baby. I have plausible deniability on that one.
Okay.
All right. Albert was yelling at me about the technical foul during the game. You can try him in. Do you want to keep yelling at me about the technical foul?
I said boo hoo. I said it's not a big deal. Get the guys fired up. I was not upset about that.
I am staunchly not a take a technical to get the guys fired up. I am a get the guys fired up without allowing another 2 points to be tacked onto a run guy. And I don't think that Shaka was intending to get a technical foul. I think he was well.
Yeah, I didn't see what actually happened.
I didn't either. Yeah, that's true. They didn't really show it.
You know, he went after a ref in the Providence game when they cut it to four. The ref was, like, weirdly in the huddle. Just kind of Shaka caught him there. Shaka was pointing at his chest, and you could tell he was doing that. I got to look out for my guys. And that was after Omax kind of got pushed through the lane, didn't get the foul. Providence cut it to four. I'm only bringing that up to say what we know about this team and why I love Shaka doing what he did in that sense, because what we know is they will continue to bring it every single night. Yeah. And we haven't seen that in, honestly, 7 years. I think Joe mentioned we had stacked wins after a big win, in the Wojo era, and this was huge to see them bounce back after giving up that run at the end of the first half and just blow them out, blow the doors off there in the second half. So just thrilled to watch a team that has that fight again. And even in those losses, again, Big East play, they scrapped and they clawed. So, that's Marquette basketball. I'm so thrilled to see it now again. And the other 2 points, one, Tyler Cole has been making those dimes all year. Two, Omax, this was the most composed he's been all season. His
100%
control. Before, he would go to the hole with a head of steam and put up a shot when he's 3 feet past the hoop. This was the most composed he's been. So also encouraging to see a team grow as the year goes on, opposed to what we've been getting used to. So just thrilled, man. Just thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, it's not – I mean, God, they – I don't know what Providence's deal is. I mean, that was sick. They won by 30 against Providence. That's freaking awesome. But, tonight, obviously, they should beat that team by 20, and they beat them by, 28? But having an identity as a team, especially now that the fast breaks are working and the – causing turnovers isn't actively hurting them anymore. Like it actually kind of was for a couple of games when they just were throwing away the fast breaks. Like having an actual identity and a function as a team is worth the price of admission for Shaka. Like I'm not sure Shaka is going to be a coach that is going to sort of stare down really difficult adverse situations against big good teams and, come out on top. Like obviously the, say what you will about the foul up three thing that really, really was a glaring, I guess it was a mess. I'm not entirely sold.
My thing has always been I think fans, incredibly overrate the effect that these situational decisions have on a team, because clearly Wojo responded, or goddamn, Shaka responded and took that and turned it into a couple just absolute drubbings. And that sort of motivational headspace that he can put those players in is so much more important than the one or two times a year where you got to figure out the timing of a close game. Because even though he, in my opinion, called that poorly, there's still at least a 60% chance that AOC misses that shot. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot more variability versus from what the decision ends up being to what the effect is. Whereas for something like we've seen the last two games, like if you coach right in those games, then the effect is a lot more likely to match the intent, if that makes any sense. Yeah, so
you're processing that really well. The one thing I'll say too is I don't think you can tell a team at this stage. And this is where I'm kind of trying to get in Shaka's head and being like, okay, what do you tell the team with 3.2 seconds left? To do when the ball gets inbounded. And if you're not like 100% sure, given that timing, that you're going to have a clear opportunity to foul, I don't think you're telling your players to like make a split second judgment call. Now, obviously the way it played out, he's wide open and very easy to foul. Like Oso absolutely can grab him right there and foul. But I just think, like, you know, usually the ideal time to do that is sort of in like a set 5 to 7 second window. And I just don't know if you can tell a team that's never really been in that situation, like, okay, if he's got a little bit of space and he has to like turn to get the shot off, grab him. But if he's like in a place to like catch and shoot, you got to like make sure that you're not committing a shooting foul. And it's just like, God,
all in 30 seconds.
Yeah. And obviously it sucked how it played out. And it was a brutal game to lose. Shaka called it a heartbreaker in his post game interview on the broadcast tonight. Like really, really definitely could feel the sense of that they were kind of beaten down after that stretch of games, but just really encouraging see them bounce back. And
shout out Wes Matthews.
Yeah, shout out, absolutely electric that he is just like hanging out and wants to go grind tape with the boys. Just like just absolutely love that out of him. Just incredible stuff from the absolute legend, who, by the way, got his contract guaranteed today. So for the rest of the season. So congratulations to Wes. And also on that note, Bucks are absolutely laying the wood on the Nets right now.
So I was gonna bring that up at some point towards the end of this, but yeah. What a great day for Milwaukee basketball.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a really important win for the Bucks too. Because this is like essentially full strength Brooklyn. Maybe not. They're missing a couple. No. None of their really good depth pieces are missing. Paul Millsap, I guess. But, and I don't talk to me about Kyrie. I was
going to say.
No, I don't like, I don't consider him a relevant human being to be considered in any sort of.
And even still, without him, they're second in the East. So, like.
Yeah. And. Yeah, good for the Bucks. Good for Wes. Wes is an absolute legend for like showing up and like trying to make sure the boys were on the same page and sort of feeling good about themselves coming out of that loss, because obviously, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know what to think about the Providence game. I keep saying like obviously these weren't like the two toughest like games, But like Providence got ranked and had won 8 in a row and only had one loss. And so it's like, I don't know, like, is that a really good win? Like, obviously it came off really well, but the way that they just were so freaking terrible in that game, and the way that I don't know how they were 13-1 to begin with, because I'm like highly skeptical of their, I don't know if it's their depth that I'm highly skeptical of, but I just like, do they have like a real, like Nate Watson is great, but we absolutely swam him under in that game.
And he was fighting for his life.
Yeah.
There, I mean, he was
in the absolute torture chamber in that game. And it was great to see, because he's always an absolute killer whenever Marquette plays for six times. Like, I feel like even when he was a freshman and like not even that regarded, not even starting, he killed them. And they just like honestly, I don't know if like Wojo could have just fronted him like any of those games and it wouldn't have been as effect, because like it basically seemed like Shaka just fronted him, and that was like,
yep,
the whole fix like laid out in front of there. So I don't know what to think about that game. I don't think Providence is really that good. I don't think they're a ranked team, even though they are technically a ranked team, but like I can't like bank this week and be like, Marquette's back, we're like on the path, let's go. But
right, this is clearly a hot streak. Like, yeah, hot streaks are not meant to last the entire season, and we're going to find out really quickly how sustainable that is after this DePaul game when we go through the seven layers of hell.
Yeah, I need them to beat somebody like meaningful too. As much as, again, Providence is a ranked team, like I really want to see them play. Like, I think they could have beat Xavier at Xavier. Obviously, that's going to be a really difficult game under any circumstances. It might be the most difficult game on the entire schedule for Marquette this year. Although Josh Hart jersey retirement night is going to be an absolute nightmare. Like, as if we needed any other like thing to make at Villanova the only game that Marquette hasn't won in the new Big East era any more difficult, we get Josh Hart jersey retirement night. Josh Hart, absolute haunter of everything Marquette, getting his freaking jersey retired. Oh my God, it's going to be a disaster.
That's going to be a nightmare.
Just all-time bad vibes going into that game. Like, oh my God,
I mean, I'm still trying to keep the mindset, just as long as every Big East team can come out of their two games against Marquette and think, God damn, that was annoying, they're going to be annoying for a while, that's all that I want. And like Greg McDermott and Dan Hurley were saying those exact words after those two tough games. So like, again, it's still very hard to beat a team by 30, much less carry that momentum into the next game, even though you're playing a much worse team, and do the exact same thing. So if these were like a couple, like 12 to 15 point margins, I'd be probably feeling a little bit different about it. And I'm not like complete. I mean, yes, I'm in the clouds, 'cause like, this is awesome and fun, but to me, the sheer full-on dominance to me is a little bit more meaningful, given what we saw in the first few games where Marquette was playing very inferior opponents and letting them stay in the game.
Yeah, I agree. It's the seven game stretch. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, back to your take on Providence. You know, Providence was probably a little overvalued, because I think some of their Big East wins were against teams that were missing players. And so maybe that fed their hot streak a little bit, but that's still a great win to blow out a team like that.
Yeah, sure.
That's going to be in the tournament hunt. And yeah, like you talk about going to Villanova and worry about getting beat. Yeah, that may happen, but when you're looking at it from Marquette's perspective, that's not a game you have to win by any stretch of the imagination. You know, if you're talking about making the tournament, which is, you know, maybe a little lofty, but not unrealistic for this team, you know, stomach a loss at Villanova, that's, you know, you can live with that. You don't have to go to Villanova and beat Villanova. You don't have to go to Xavier and beat Xavier necessarily. You would love to do it, because because then it makes that math for making the tournament that much easier. But yeah. Yeah, if you go to Villanova and get blown out, that's fine. You just regroup and try to get another one. You know, Ken Pom, I think, still has Marquette losing the next seven after DePaul.
For sure.
But I think they're going to be a lot closer than that. Some of those, and they may pick off a team or two there, and then all of a sudden math work out that you can get to, I don't know what the magic number is, if it's 9 wins, if it's 10, if it's 11 to get to the tournament, but yeah, like, it doesn't matter if Marquette loses by 1 or by 30 at Villanova. I don't know if it changes the math.
Probably does much, a little bit. Like,
well, if, by 30 if you're talking if, about the net.
If but, they throw a stinker out there. Yeah. Because that's the thing, is like,
my point is, like, you don't have to beat everybody. You know, I think, you know, you look at maybe something around 10 and 10, I think Marquette is at least interesting when it's talking about possibly making the tournament. I know it's a long ways to go, but, you know, blowing out Providence, that's going to hold up. You know, they're not going to put an asterisk by that, by any stretch of the imagination. That was a nice win, and Providence is going to be a team that's maybe in tournament or right on the bubble with Marquette. So to have a convincing win over them is one, you don't need to downplay that at all. That was a nice win.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think part of what's, you know, it's good to win games, but beating the absolute breaks off of these two teams over the last week has done a huge service to Marquette's tournament chances. There's not a realistic path before these two games, unless Marquette completely like flipped the switch and was suddenly competitive with, you know, on the level of Villanova and Xavier night in, night out. Now, obviously they played a good game at Xavier and lost a tough one, but you know, they're not on that level consistently. But the last two games, just absolutely smashing the metrics like they have, you know, getting to 49 in KenPom is like, okay, there's a path now, because 49 in KenPom is a tournament team 75% of the time, probably. I don't know, Ben, that doesn't sound ridiculous, right? That's about what you would think too.
My calculator work shows that 49 in KenPom means that we're making the Final Four.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's usually what you like to see. But, you know, like, that's, you know, where they were in, like, the 80s of KenPom. 80s coming in?
Before? Yeah, 85 to 49 is...
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole... Wild. It's a completely different team. Like, you can't make the tournament in KenPom if you're in the 80s. And you can't, in theory, you know, climb the ladder as quickly as they have over the last two games, you know, without absolutely kicking the crap out of Providence and Georgetown. And by doing so, you know, who knows if they're going to be able to maintain, you know, a 40s KenPom, but a 40s KenPom can get you in, like, you know, with how that reflects the other metrics that the NCAA tournament selection committee actually uses, a 40s KenPom can get you in the tournament at like 18 and 14 or whatever.
Like they're above Arkansas right now. Like Arkansas is 50. And yeah. Like,
I mean, they're above Providence now, and Providence is ranked.
And Creighton. Like,
they're good now. Like in terms of KenPom, like, and, mm-hmm. and the most damning thing about them all season has been that their metrics were off the reservation. Like they did not have anywhere near good enough metrics. And like Torvik has had them outside the top 100 for like the entire season. And so like metrically, they were so far off of what the eye test was sort of telling us at 8-3. And Alan and I kind of had a back and forth that at 8-3, like I felt, why the heck are we so back in these metrics and so far down the pecking order in these metrics? But then just like seeing it the last few games has and skyrocket up, like all of a sudden it's like, oh wow, are we like now metrically higher than I think we are, like out of nowhere? Like it's a complete shift, and it's a massive game changer for them going forward. Anyway, that's enough like me yelling about metrics. let's do something slightly different. Patty's on with us, wants to talk. Put them on here. Patty, what you got? unmute if you want. Also, like, anybody else want to go, like, please chime in, like, Seabass, Ruby, if you want to hop in and share your thoughts. Yeah. Hey, Patty, what's going on?
You guys know that my broker is on, I haven't been to all the spaces, but is this a first?
I think he just ducked out as you said that, and I was completely aware of that and being like I don't know. Hey, he's back. I wasn't gonna say anything like about it, but yeah, like I don't care. Like, good. Like, I'm not gonna
everybody wants Chaka's shirt.
Wait. Can you expand on that? My mom literally texted me and was like, Shaka's got great merch on tonight. And I was like, okay, like I didn't even notice it, but that's hilarious that you said it. Like, that's really fun.
The shirt, I saw a bunch of people on Twitter rows that somebody then asked and broker responded it was team issued. Available to fans. So
I need to see what this shirt looks like. Did somebody post a picture of it? I didn't bother look at it or like really notice it during the game, but we need
a pullover, but I think it was a polo, but he was wearing a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah. Well, again, all right, let's discuss that while you brought it up there, Joe.
Yes, please. I've had some thoughts.
I don't know about that. Like the polo with the long sleeve shirt underneath is certainly something. I don't know. You know, obviously, like, you know, if Shaka wants to like make that his signature, like, you know, at least he's got a thing that he likes and he sticks to it. But that is an interesting look.
I wish the polo shirt fit a little tighter, just a smidge.
And I kind of think that maybe there's something at play where Shaka is just kind of a really skinny dude. And it's like not everything like fits him great. I kind of think that might be what's at play, but
I can see that.
I don't know about the long sleeve shirt under the polo. Seabass,
I'm glad he's cut his hair to a reasonable length at least.
I mean, I think the hair is an interesting thing because they said on FS1 after the game, Mike Hill said he looks like Nick Wright. From that Shaka and Nick Wright are doppelgangers, and that they both grew hair at the same time, which is so funny. Like, because that's like totally my reaction to like Shaka. Like, Shaka didn't have like hair like that forever. Seabass, what's up? It's been a while. How's it going?
It's good to be back. One point on
good to have you back, man.
Oh my god, it feels good. I mean, I've been MIA for a while. around the holidays, but let me tell you guys, I've been watching Shaka since before he was at Texas, but I'm from the DFW area, so I'm a huge fan of Longhorns outside of college basketball.
Sorry to hear that.
I know Texas is never gonna be back.
I used to bark for Sark, so I feel you on that one. I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's tough, but honestly, he's a skinny dude. I saw him back at Texas when he was wearing suits still. By the way, I kind of like when basketball coaches wear suits. I'm kind of in the unpopular opinion that I think that basketball coaches should wear suits.
I disagree, but I appreciate that you have that opinion.
Okay. But yeah, no, he's skinny. You're ready, Ben. So definitely those polos. I think you buy them an extra extra large or something. They look way too long on them.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
I'm not sure. I think it's kind of exacerbated by the long sleeve under too. I'm not sure. You know what? More power to him though. And maybe it's like cold in Milwaukee, but he wants to wear polo. I don't know. And when I say maybe it's like cold in Milwaukee, it's obviously cold in Milwaukee, and maybe that's his remedy, but I don't know. Who's to say? I've just started wearing basketball jerseys over sweatshirts, and that's probably equally heinous. but it's fine. It's a look. I'm rocking the Jimmy over the sweatshirt, Jimmy Butler jersey over the sweatshirt right now as we speak. So maybe I'm not one to talk.
No, it's a perfect
No, I agree. It's very comfortable. It's in the winter.
The basketball jersey.
I just for wintertime game attendance in any sport, the jersey over the sweatshirt is just a really high quality move. So I don't know. Maybe it's Shaka's version of the jersey over the sweatshirt. Who's to say? Yeah. CBS, do you have any basketball takes for us?
This could be
Say it.
Biggest don't lose to DePaul days.
Oh.
In this young team's like existence, in Shaka Smart's tenure, because if we lose to DePaul, God forbid.
Yeah,
in the boy.
Marquette basketball in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
We have never made the tournament if we lose to DePaul.
It's true. We went over this last time, Ben. We don't make the tournament if we lose to DePaul. It's
yeah.
The years that.
I'm saying it right now, this team better continue this run that we're on. I don't know what Shaka fired into this team after the break, after the Christmas, or was it New Year's? But two blowout wins like this.
Big man.
It's good.
It's big.
And they didn't try hard against Georgetown. Like, they were like. Tyler Kolek was doing anything and everything he wanted.
Yeah.
It was really
They didn't – honestly, they played – they were really – for two stretches, they were really on point and concise in the way that they were attacking and scoring. But aggregate game, I didn't think they played all that well. I mean, I think they had huge stretches where they kind of just were not great on defense. Georgetown was able to score – way too comfortably at the beginning of the game and sort of in the five either side of halftime stretches.
Yeah, some of those offensive rebounds, they had like six over a point.
God, the one position they had three in a row before the foul that went to the commercial was just, I was, oh, God, that was.
The defensive rebounding will probably be the thing that kills us.
Yeah, God, that's like one thing. Like, I wonder if Pat Ewing at a half was just like, attack them on the defense on the defensive glass, because if you know put them under pressure to rebound, they kind of struggle sometimes. And I think that is like a decent way to sort of counteract some of Marquette's positive momentum, because again, those two stretches, like if they can pull those into games that matter more and aren't against like the dying embers of the Georgetown program, it like they can really, really cover up a lot of sort of so-so stretches in game in tougher games.
Yep.
But I think a way to sort of counteract that might just be sort of throw everyone at the defensive glass, because Marquette rebounds a whole hell of a lot better when they have either Oso or Kerr sort of boxing out the center. And then they send Justin or Omax free in to attack wherever the ball ends up bouncing. Like that's when Marquette is like a really solid defensive rebounding team. And I wonder if you just flood the defensive glass. Now, obviously probably a risk if Marquette's getting up and down in transition. I was listening to Part of My Take with Ryan Russillo today. And they were talking about like things dads love in basketball. And one is like following your shot. It's like dads love it when you follow your shot. And let me tell you, I played basketball for my dad for like 5 years. My dad loves it when you follow your shot. That's like, it's a perfect comment, but
it helps if you miss a lot also.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. Yeah, it's a really good youth basketball thing. But what they were saying is you can't follow your shot in the NBA, because if you follow your shot, you get absolutely axed on the break. But I wonder if teams will start saying, okay, follow your shot against Marquette, because if you can sort of start knocking their confidence on the defensive glass down, you can like really sort of make headway against them. And it might be a case where Marquette will need to sort of counteract that by really getting the momentum going and hitting them on the break.
I guess to Marquette's credit a little bit today, I don't want to completely trash them on the defensive boards, because, you know, aside from that one really bad possession, I hate being the, if you take this bad thing away, they're a good thing guy, but, you know, like – the offensive rebounding is kind of the one thing that Georgetown is legitimately good at. And you know, Marquette dominated on the boards in the first half, and Georgetown kind of made up for it in the second half to the point where it was about even. But still, if you kind of holding your own against a team that puts their identity into rebounding, then that's still a pretty good thing. And I'm noticing a little bit more. It's not like a drastic difference like we have been seeing with the overall direction of the team, but they've been making some small but steady strides on the offensive rebounding end. And Kerr and Oso particularly, who, by the way, I want to put the nickname of Milk Bear into the ether after your suggestion for that. Well,
I think Joe's idea was better, the Oso Leche.
Oso Leche
was great. It's extremely obscure because you have to sort of like make the Matt Helt leap. And honestly, like, as much as, yes, I understand the connection with like his field goal percentage being elite and Matt Helt being like the most highly rated offensive player on KenPom for like an entire season that 1 year. Let's not limit Oso to the Matt Helt comparison, because Oso is, I mean,
you want to get
crazy here. Let's get crazy. Has the highest ceiling of any big since I started following Marquette, hands down. Highest ceiling. He's a sophomore and he's already like, having 20-point games on straight dunks. Like, the dude is growing. His growth chart is going to break through the top of the graph, man.
And you're saying that when you've rooted for guys like Devontae Gardner and Henry Ellenson.
Again, like, Henry Ellenson got RIP. I don't know what happened there, man. Tough NBA career for Henry Ellenson.
Yeah, that we don't talk about that too much.
Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
No, I think I agree 100%. The one, obviously, you know, adding a little muscle, but other than that, the one thing Oso would need to add is just a little range. If he becomes an outside shooter, he's an NBA player.
Yeah.
You know, there's some work to be done between now and then, but I agree with you. I mean, because, you know, the only big, I guess, in the last quite a while that from Marquette that's made the NBA is Ellenson in, what, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, and he can't and he's not even on the radar of these teams that are shuttling people in and out right
he's
now.
Like, he's so. 10 days. So, but no, I agree. I mean, he is just a sophomore. He technically got 3 years of eligibility left.
And, yeah, he does.
He uses them all, and he develops an outside shot in that time and has muscle.
Yeah, I mean, the outside shooting is basically the only piece that's like noticeably absent right now, because he's already really effective on defensively against pick and rolls. Like, he's really good.
He is perfect.
He's really good at getting.
He's the perfect.
Okay, well, I don't know if I was going to say perfect, but he's really good at getting his hands in passing lanes on P&Rs, and he's a really effective shot blocker, and just he's very laterally strong defensively. So yeah, basically the only thing he's missing is some sort of like jump shot, where because right now, like, he's obviously a consequence of him shooting like 80% for the season is that he's obviously not attempting anything that's not like his biggest range is probably like a 6-foot hook shot right now.
He had a kind of a little bit of a dream shake today at one point.
Oh, I loved the hook shot he had where he faked underneath and then read that and flipped it over his head. Oh, that was beautiful. That was And he was had a much quieter game today after the really good game against Creighton. And it was Creighton, right? I'm not looking right now.
Creighton. That was a 22.
It was the insanely good game against Creighton, and then against Providence, he and Kerr were the two-headed monster. I think
his usage is kind of increasing. Like, it's for the season, it's around 13-14%, which is pretty low, but like in the last three games, he's been used quite a bit more in the offense. So
it's a true time share. Also, Marquette up to 66 on Torvik. So they've gone from it's been a similar thing to what you've seen on KenPom, where Marquette was like mid-80s on KenPom up to 49. Marquette was like mid-100. Like the first 10 of 100. I don't know how to say that 100s, because mid 100 makes it sound like I'm saying 150, but you know what I'm saying? Like 105.
Oh, yeah, I get you. Yeah.
And so they're up to 66 now. And it's a similar arrow in terms of how they've paced up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What's anyone else have anything? Please feel free to jump on.
The last thing I'll say about Oso, he's got a chance to be, you know, better than Henry Ellenson is in the NBA.
I would hope so.
Yeah, Henry disappointed all of us. He left too early, I think.
I don't know what to say about Henry, man.
Henry
was probably too slow, to be honest, is probably why he's not in the NBA anymore. Yeah. But also, he never really figured his shot out. Like, true. He was – anyway.
But, no, and another thing, I want to hear just kind of what we would be – I don't know if we talked about this at the start, but what we would be satisfied with after the DePaul game. Let's just not talk about DePaul yet. After the DePaul game, in that, I think, six-game stretch where we play, like, all ranked opponents.
Yeah. Seven, I think, yeah.
Seven. Seton Hall, Villanova, Xavier, Seton Hall, Providence, Villanova, UConn.
That sounds like death, but what record out of those seven games would you guys be satisfied with?
2-5, I would accept.
I'd be fine with only one win if there are two legitimate down-to-the-wire losses along with it.
I want to beat Xavier. Can I just say that? I don't give a crap.
I kind of want to beat Xavier.
I want to win that Xavier game because they should have won the game in Cincinnati, and it just kind of got away from them, and they weren't sort of as a team, they weren't in a place to win that game at that time, even though they were competitive in that game. I want to win that Xavier game, man, because they are really good, but they're not a team that has one guy that can kind of kick the door down against Marquette. Like they're a very team, and Marquette can exploit teams that are just kind of like very balanced because of how they can kind of swarm everyone else's system with the way that they play. So
I think that game and the Seton Hall game are the two games that I'm kind of looking at as like if we're most likely to win two games, those would be them.
I want the two wins to be against Nova and Seton Hall. Specific opponents.
I don't know if we're beating Nova, man. They're so tough.
That'd be crazy.
And I think they're going to be impossible to press, which is part of the problem because we need to press them because we can't really play if we're not pressing.
But Colin Gillespie is a swinging bar door on defense, so I think Cohen has a lot of just carve
up. Were you picturing the Simpsons meme when you said that? Like the grandpa
moved in out. I was thinking of the saloon doors. That's the word I should have said. But same concepts.
All right, we got some. Sean wants to say something. Sean, what you got, man?
Oh, hey, sorry, I got nothing. I just dialed in. So.
Oh. Okay. Well,
I would also say 1-6. Would be all right, but then you've got a lot of pressure on those last six games.
If
this is dangerous to say, but if you assume you beat DePaul, let's say you beat DePaul, all right, so then you're 3-3. And if you go 1-6, then, you know, you essentially got to go 5-1 or 6-0 in those last six, which is doable.
I
just hope your spirit isn't broken.
To be clear, I do not want them to lose to Butler, Georgetown, or DePaul all year, and they are very capable of sweeping St. John's and I don't know if they're that capable of sweeping St. John's. St. John's will be a weird match for them.
I forget there's also a St. John's game looming there that may or may not be made up at some point.
Yeah, I think as long as it's only one, I think they're going to probably get it back. Although St. John's might have to do more than one, so who knows. But
I think two wins would put us in a good spot. One win is still dicey if we're thinking about bubble watch.
I think Marquette's just gonna be a bubble team, man. Like I'm ready to embrace life on the bubble, man. Let's go.
Yeah, I think that the Illinois win cements us as like at least a part of the conversation, and like the Charleston weekend. Like I think like no matter what, someone on Bracket Matrix is gonna put us either in the last four in or first four out or whatever. So it's just kind of a matter of the progress that we're able to make in that.
Sorry, I just saw Patty just tweeted me the picture of the merch. It is kind of sharp. Hell yeah, I like it.
I'm gonna love
like it. It's like a yellow top polo, but it's like, is it like a sweatshirt too with like a collar? Like how?
You wish. It's still his long sleeve. Like.
Oh, okay. So it's a polo. All right, got it. Yeah. Those are just the sleeves. Did a nice job of blending the sleeves with the other sleeves. Yeah, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
speaking of that St. John's game, has anybody looked it up? Is there even a window anybody knows of where both teams could make that game up?
Well, I have the schedule here right now. Marquette has a decent window the weekend of the Super Bowl, I want to say. Is the Super Bowl the first weekend of February again this year?
It's right before Valentine's Day.
It's the second weekend. Okay, so
yeah,
Marquette doesn't play the weekend of, doing some quick math, the 5th and 6th. I don't know if St. John's plays that weekend, obviously. That would be... Oh, they do. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's got to be tough, right?
Would it be crazy, like, considering it would be in New York, would it be crazy to play that game the Tuesday before the Big East tournament?
Oh, no.
I mean, that may suck for both teams, but
I'd sign me the heck up for that, man. Oh, give me that. St. John's has a week where they don't play. Let me see. What does Marquette look like? It's the 16th through the 23rd. St. John's doesn't play. No, probably not. Marquette plays the 20th. That doesn't work.
It'd be tough to make it up. I don't know if it'll get made up. I mean, but we'll see.
Yeah, I hope it does, man.
Plus, they have other games to make up too, right?
That's a good. Yeah. Well, they've only played one, so I don't know. And it was like yesterday, I think. No, it was 2 days ago. Played DePaul. They did not lose to DePaul. Yeah, I don't know. Champagne scares me though. Dude, he's the best player in the conference, I think.
I would love to play St. John's the Tuesday before the Big East tournament. I know it would never happen.
It's a great idea.
It would allow that to happen.
I don't know if either team would even be up for it, but I'm just throwing out windows there.
It would just be a very crap game.
There could be a very real world where Marquette could use that win to get into the NCAA tournament. And so that's really, like... Yeah. Please.
Like a realistic, potential makeup game that could get a bit just with that extra win on their if they win it. Yeah,
I like everyone. If everyone, first of all, everyone follow Casual Hoya, an actual good team account. Unlike No Escalators, which sucks. It's funny, but they're mean. I don't like them, or UConn for that matter. And they're mean to Ben for being from Kansas.
Go Shockers.
Isn't that your gripe with them that they make fun of you from being from Kansas?
Not me specifically. I don't think I've interacted.
It was either
with
you
them
or
so
Sam
much.
Like talk about how they like.
It was me. Like because like
yeah,
from
yeah,
my
yeah.
From my fandom of Wichita State, like with the
and they're super . They are like
a bunch of
borderline abusive to programs from the AAC.
Yeah, a bunch of like poor people don't know how to read thing. It's like, all right, cool, dude.
Your school's in Storrs, Connecticut. Sorry, that's like apparently like the Ritz-Carlton of cities.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get me started on UConn being back in the conference. But all that is to say, Casual Hoya, an actual good team account, tweeted a great. Static that I'm sure that they put every time Georgetown does something terrible and eats the trash. Picture of Pat Ewing looking very sorrowful. That makes me happy to see that. And that was a brief mention on that. What time is it? It is 7, and we started this at like 5:50. All right, let's call it. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate people joining in. This was a great crowd tonight. If you got to chime in, happy to hear from
your servers.
But don't actually send Ben vibes as he continues to battle no symptom COVID.
I'm almost out of isolation. Don't worry.
He's really fighting. He's really fighting the Omicron hard here. But thank you for playing sick and playing hurt tonight for us. We appreciate
I do it for the people.
Unlike Antonio Brown, like you play through. So thanks everybody. We'll hopefully have this as a podcast as well. I can stop. Oh, I'm gonna just hang. No, I stop recording, right? Usually, yeah, I'm just gonna stop recording.